Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
The long-anticipated Peter Jackson's eight-hour docuseries, The Beatles Get Back. It was released just this week on Disney+. It's an extended behind-the-scenes look at the recording of the Let It Be album on the rooftop gig and all the rest of it. Last week, we spoke to Michael Lindsay Hogg, who directed the original Let It Be movie, and it's Lindsay Hogg's footage, of course, that Peter Jackson is using here. So how does the Peter Jackson series compare to the original Let It Be? Well, Pat Carty from Hot Press has the full story in the current edition of the Hot Press, the definitive story, frankly, and he's been watching the whole thing, and he's going to talk to me in a second or two about this. But just a very quick one here. Here's a clip.
We're talking about 14 songs we hope to get. I've got a feeling.
How many have we already recorded good enough?
None.
Oh, yeah. And none of us has had the idea of what the show's going to be. I've got a
feeling. I would dig to play on stage, you know. Nobody else wants to do a show.
I think we've got a bit shy. Oh, no!
Pat, do you have a feeling, do you?
I've got a great feeling, Dave. A feeling deep inside.
Good. I'll tell you, because it was this time last year that they gave us the trailer and said this is going to be great, and it looked great. It's better than great. It's absolutely the music moment of the Garth Who. It's fantastic, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is. I mean, I was looking through the press, you know, and you said there we have the definitive story, and we do. You can ignore all the other 100,000 articles and radio shows and everything. This is where you get the real skinny on it. I could only find one detractor. I think it was in The Guardian. Someone said it drags. Now, you could say that. I mean, when Disney,
if you're not a fan,
this,
it kind of does.
Yeah, but Disney sent this out. This was the funny thing, and they gave us a thing to sign, and they said, listen, if you're watching this on your computer, Pat, turn it off if you go out of the room, and if there's anyone else in the house, they're not allowed to watch it. And I said, sure, who else am I going to get to watch 7.5 hours of The Beatles with me in my house? Yeah. Not a chance.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing, all right. So look, I mean, the whole thing, I've watched it now all in one sitting, and it's just, I just thought
Watched it twice.
Yeah, well, no, I saw it 5 hours first, and now I've seen it again. It's just the best. It's just, it's unbelievable that this kind of thing is actually, like, you couldn't make it up. It really is. What did Jackson, I mean, I know you were at the press conference the other day, and I was at it too. I mean, at it, as in watching him on my screen. And basically, he said it's like getting a time machine, going back and seeing Michelangelo doing the Sistine Chapel, you know?
Well, yeah, I think that was me who said that. But anyway,
no, he said that.
Oh, did he? Well, then I must have stolen it from him. That's fair enough. He did say that, like, this is just amazing that this exists. And it's amazing that it was sitting in a vault for 50 years. And the only thing we got to see was the Let It Be film. And all I had to go on was it was a grubby old bootleg DVD. Yeah. Because, you know, I haven't seen that in years. But I do remember it being dark and, short on laughs and a bad way to finish up. You know, I know they did Abbey Road after, but this is the last thing that came out. So a bad way to finish up what's the greatest story ever told, let's be honest.
Okay, well then, just to look at some of the stuff that you've done about it already. Like, I didn't know this necessarily, that they were going to make the movie, but it was actually COVID, you say, that put the kibosh on the movie, was it?
Yeah, well, I think it was announced in, I think it was 2019 or maybe 20. No, 2019 it must have been, on the anniversary of the 50th anniversary of the rooftop concert, that Peter Jackson was going to take this on. And I think the initial thing was to do a 2.5 hour movie or a 3 hour movie. Although, if you get Peter Jackson in, so you're never going to get a 3 hour movie. You're always going to get 9 hours. But I think COVID, you know, that obviously the cinemas weren't open, so Disney's aren't fools. They said, listen, we're not going to probably make our money back on this. And then I think it was Jackson who went to them, because as he was going through the stuff, and said, there's so much stuff here. We can do it this way. We can do this three-part thing. And he also said, I don't think I mentioned it in the article, but he did say it in the press conference, that he was thinking about when Anthology came out back in the 90s.
Yeah.
That it was shown, if you remember, it was shown one night after the other, certainly where he was anyway. I think it was the same here, one night after the other. So he came up with the idea. And then the idea to put it out on Thanksgiving, of course, is a no-brainer, you know, because everybody's sitting at home. I'm sure there was an awful lot of people the other day going, listen, you're all right, man. I don't want any more turkey. You have to go in and watch 3 hours of tea.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is like, the whole thing was, they were supposed to go into a terrible cold studio in Twickenham, work for just a couple of weeks for a TV show and possibly a live gig, and they were trying to work all that out. There's very little organisation going on. It's really kind of weird. Like, really, is that the best thing? Like, these are the four most famous people in the world.
Yeah, it's a crazy idea even when you think about it now. Certainly now, the way bands work now, we're going to go in for 2 weeks. We're going to write these songs, first of all.
Yeah.
We're going to work them up and then we're going to play them live. Like, if you can imagine, and also Peter Jackson alluded to that as well, you know, that after Brian Epstein died, you know, that the organization wasn't there and he thought this was very disorganized. I mean, can you imagine someone like that? I'm not comparing them at all, but we'll say U2, and you and I have been lucky enough to have been backstage and seen how many people work with U2 and the organization involved. You know, you would never see a band do this with only two or, you know, Mal Evans is there, Dennis Adele is there, yeah. There's a few lads, but that's it.
Mal Evans got a sad end later on, I can tell you. Okay, so, like, it's just a few people hanging around. Obviously, Michael Lindsay-Hogg is the most one with his big cigar all the time, but, I mean, he's just trying to get stuff together. And he's lying and cheating to the Beatles, which, thank God he was, because he pretended he had, like, oh, no, that camera's turned off now. But actually, he just had a little tape over the light. Everything was filmed all the time, including a microphone in the flower pot in the canteen when George and, when John and Paul start talking about, jeepers, George has left the band, what are we going to do? Isn't it brilliant?
Yeah, but that's the real revelation in this. First of all, and you know, in the Let It Be film, they weren't allowed to show George leaving and George saying, listen, I'll see you around the clubs. Good luck. Yeah. I'm gone. And I would argue, first of all, talking about George in the first episode, you know, he's a bit of a petulant teenager.
Oh, my God. He's had enough of not having his songs in the albums and he comes around. He's a real curmudgeon altogether in some ways. I kind of like him for it, though.
Yeah, but then he comes in with songs like I, Me, Mine and For Your Blue, you know.
Yeah.
That's just not as good as McCartney. Anyway, we'll come back to that. But the whole idea that they had this thing in the flower pot, like, I couldn't believe that when I saw that. Oh, my God, what's this? And then you hear John and Paul having a real honest conversation.
Well, funny you should say honest conversation, because they just get, well, obviously every single journal has written about it, but The Guardian yesterday has this, and he mentions that in some ways, just about, like, how modern it is and yet how old it is, because he says there's an arrogant temptation to assume that it's the current generation of men in particular that has acquired emotional intelligence, that the men of 50 years ago were strangers to empathy or self-awareness. But then you eavesdrop on John Lennon and Paul McCartney reflecting on how they've driven George Harrison to walk out. It's a festering wound, says Lennon, and yesterday we allowed it to get even deeper and we didn't give him any bandages. And there's all that kind of thing, even the way they're dressed. And your man writes here about just the way London looks, because the people that are interviewed down below, my brother was there, by the way. He was walking past when that all happened, yeah.
And is there anything a Fanning wasn't?
Yeah, I know, it's amazing. He kind of said, like, you know, nobody could see anything. That's the problem. And like do you see the people all being interviewed when the thing is on? Like, sorry, is it the Beatles? Or they didn't even know who it was, you know? Cause it's
people recognizing his voice and things like that. Oh, is that Paul McCartney's voice?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think what that guy was pointing out in the article about the class thing is that, you know, it's either all fellas in bowler hats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And cheeky, chappy cabbies.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the other thing that occurred to me, just reading that article and watching it as well, is that if that happened now, it wouldn't be the same reaction at all, because the old people, I was looking at those guys in the bowler hats and going, look at those old guys. And then I was thinking, oh, sure, he's probably the same age as me.
Yeah, younger.
The old people, the old people would be me and you, Dave.
Exactly, like, for God's sake.
The generation gap isn't there anymore.
That's the other thing. And you know what I mean? And your man is saying also the class gap isn't either, because everybody's middle class kind of thing as well. But here, I'm just going to give you a blast of this here, which is about that. Hold on.
We should do the show in a place we're not allowed to do it. Getting forcibly ejected.
I think that's too dangerous. I mean, that is an interesting thought of you all being beaten up.
Get back. What we'd have to do is sitting down. Then we get too excited.
So all the cameras rolling, as I say, that thing there obviously is like the gig on top of the roof of January 10, 69, which is an awful long time ago. And like when George was gone, they said, well, maybe we could get in Eric Clapton, etc. And it did change. I mean, did you notice that John was kind of a bit nowhere, I thought? He was a bit of a nowhere man for the first like bits in Twickenham. But he really perks up, doesn't he, later on?
Stoned, I think, was he?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the big problem, yeah.
Peter Sellers comes in. I heard you talking about
Oh, my God, Peter Sellers. That's so embarrassing. Like. Yeah.
Well, he I think he spots the cameras and goes, God, I have to get out of here.
Yeah.
But Lennon is just babbling at that stage.
Yeah.
And there's another scene where he's obviously very stoned and he's talking about getting stoned. And you see McCartney look at the camera going, listen, I think we should talk about this when the camera isn't here. You know, he's still.
Yeah, but also when John doesn't make it in one morning, McCartney is talking and he's going on about Yoko. I was like, you know, that's fine. That's his thing if that's what he wants to do. Like, even then, the annoyance of having her there, obviously, like he was nice about it, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. But now I knew this would come up because I know how you feel about Yoko Ono. So I'm going to address this. Now, first of all, I would agree with you when it comes to Yoko Ono's artistry. I think she's a charlatan. I think she's the Chancellor's Chanter. Absolutely no doubt about it. And I'm not being misogynist or racist. I'm allowed to criticize
she's dreadful.
Other
Go
people
on.
That middle-aged white men. Anyway, the thing to remember here, and it was Jason and Stephen from the Nothing Is Real podcast who reminded me of this, that a month before this happened, so in November of 1968, Yoko Ono had a miscarriage.
Yes.
She was 6 months. Right. So John Lennon, you know, maybe we could look at it this way, and that bringing her in rather than leaving her sitting in a flat while he goes off to work with his mates for 30 days is more sign of that emotional intelligence that your man was talking about. And to be fair, just going on the footage we're looking at, you know, there is a bit of screaming when there's one person missing. She gets on the microphone and she does that a couple of times. But the rest of the time, she's there. She's not suggesting here, play a D minor there or anything like that. At the same time, Linda turns up a few times. Now,
yeah, take a few pictures
Linda,
and leave. Yeah, she wasn't dealing heroin.
You could argue that.
Yeah.
No, true. And you could argue that Linda, yeah, taking pictures, and the pictures are used in the documentary, and they're very good.
Yeah.
But she brings in Heather one day, Heather, her small child. Now, what could be more distracting?
Yeah, but that was like when they weren't even necessarily doing anything yet. They were just hanging around kind of thing, you know?
You're not
okay,
to,
all right.
You won't
okay.
listen to my argument.
No, I'm not going to listen to that at all, no. Okay, what was I going to say? Yeah, the move to Apple, I thought, like, it obviously changed everything in that. But the way it all comes together, I mean, what is it about that gig? What is it about them up on the roof? I mean, it's
well,
just...
I heard you talking to Michael Lindsay Hogg last week, and I heard you describe this as the greatest filmed gig of all time. Greatest. Like, I don't know if I totally agree with you on that,
what?
But it is fantastic.
Of course it is. You're not going to start going all Live Aid Queen on me now, are you?
No, I'm not. I might mention, I went to see Bruce Springsteen in the Lighthouse last week. It was fantastic. Anyway, I'm not even going to get into that. And it's in Hot Press as well, by the way. I'm not even going to get into that. But the gig, I mean, I think, you know, when people are saying, oh, it drags a bit. I mean, when they move from Twickenham, which looks like a cold, horrible place, to Apple, it completely changes. They start to get it together. And I think one of the heroes of this whole piece arrives. Now, whether it's just Chancellor turns up or whether it's scripted
he
or not.
He does. He just comes to visit his friend George.
Well, I've read that. Yeah, fair enough. What we're looking at, that's what happens.
You're talking Billy Preston, who's fantastic addition.
I think it changes the whole thing.
He does, because they're on their best behaviour because there's a guest here.
Comb their hair and they start, and the playing is immediately better. The songs start to come into shape.
Speaking of hair, you know, by the way, Brian Redden was telling me, like, the one thing that got him when he saw the whole thing, which he thought was fantastic, he watched it all in one go, was they've all got fantastic hair.
Well, the thing that gets me, when you're watching it, first of all, and they turn up, first of all, in the first, is they're so young. This is what the thing.
Well, I mean, like, do you know what age George Harrison is for this whole movie? 25.
25.
They conquered the world and he's 25. The rest of them are 27 and John is the 2 years older than Paul. I mean, none of them were 30 when they broke up, and they broke up 15 months after this. I mean,
we're
officially.
Used to looking at, and you've talked to him yourself, we're used to seeing Paul McCartney been interviewed in the last 20, 30 years right, as he ages, and he's still a very well-preserved man. I'm not knocking him at all. But to see them like this for a protracted period at that age, it's incredible. And Paul McCartney's so handsome in this as well. You know,
he is.
Not that the
others
are off.
Yeah, and even the way he moves on the roof. Okay, I love the way he holds the bass and does it all, you know. Hold on a second. And actually, some of the songs that might in some ways seem, they're only all right. They're actually, some of them are, obviously, Don't Let Me Down, I Dig a Pony are fantastic. But I mean, even the rest of them, like the one or two are, like, I mean, okay, there's one song in the movie, Please Get That Hammer Out of Here, Maxwell Silver Blinking Hammer. God, it's awful.
Yeah, but see, hold on a second. But Maxwell Silver Hammer, when they tell Mal to go out, listen, go out and get an anvil, man. Now, first of all, in Twickenham in 1969, listen, I'm just going down to the old blacksmith's down
down the road. Exactly.
Anyway, he comes back with the anvil and they're playing it and he's hitting it. And there's the camera holds on Mal's face and he's got this grin on him. And I think Mal is us watching this.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, I can go out later on and say, you know, to hear that song, that's me playing the anvil. Fantastic.
Yeah, but it's just his smile. I can't believe I'm seeing this. I'm in the middle of this, even though he's known him for years. I think he represents us there.
I'm going to give you a blast of this. Hold on.
The best bit of us always has been and always will be is when we're backs against the wall.
All we've got is us. What do you think?
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me. Speaking words of wisdom.
Do you want to do it once more then?
Yes, yes.
I mean, we'll never get a chance to do it again.
Let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be.
So, cats and kittens, what are we going to do?
Do you know a funny thing about that, Pat? We're talking to Pat Carthy here, who's, as I say, got the definitive story in the current edition of the Hot Press. Just about all this, in the original, like, we've often seen Paul singing that song with the camera just on him and the kind of bleary eyes and the beard and all the rest. Yeah. You only see that when the credits go up at the very end after 7 or 8 hours. You don't actually see the full-on song of that. I'm quite surprised.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's a scene somewhere where they're talking about the scenery or you know, Lindsay Michael Hogg is talking to someone about we're going to do the show. And in the background, you can kind of hear the chords of Let It Be. And I was watching it thinking, Jesus, is he writing Let It Be in the background while they're having a chat?
So there's loads of that going on. I mean, like, Paul has said in the last week that Give Me Some Truth, which is the opening track on the second album by John Lennon, Imagine. And that, like Paul said, and Paul is adding an awful lot to it. Pardon?
Yeah, the Not Great album by John Lennon.
The first album is great. The second album, Imagine, is great. Then he goes to New York and the whole thing falls apart. Anyway, the point is, all of this, that Paul was doing more to that song than I realised, and Paul's completely forgotten. He had no idea that he did it. He can't remember.
Yeah. I think the thing watching this is that Paul McCartney is my favourite Beatle, for a start. I know he mightn't be yours, but he's my favourite Beatle.
Yeah, he is, I'd say.
He is the grafter in this. He is the one doing all the work.
I'll tell you, okay.
And you could go back further and say that they would have broken up after Epstein died if it wasn't for Paul McCartney. I fully believe that.
Yeah, and there's no leader at all. And even George Martin is a bit of a backseat in this because maybe it's John's fault from saying we'd want to get rid of that guy for the moment. And all of these things, they had no, and Paul was just trying to move it on, especially since they were up against the clock. You know, he was doing a damn good job.
John Lennon is late one morning, and so the three of them are sitting there, Paul and George.
Yeah, that's the bit where he talks
George
about Yoko, yeah.
This is a different bit. George is smoking a fag. Ringo is half asleep. Paul is noodling around on the bass.
Oh, yeah.
And next thing, Get Back comes to him out of nowhere. And the other two lads are not interested, right? They're not interested. They're looking at him going, Jenny, here we go. And he, through dedication, graft, and talent, he pulls this out of nowhere. And suddenly George perks up and Ringo starts singing along. And it's amazing to watch. That is maybe the best bit in it.
There's lots of bits like that. I mean, one of the other things about it is also like that they're there to really almost not record. They're actually there to rehearse. It's not like they have all these songs and they just have to get them down with a 4-track, 8-track, whatever it is. Pardon?
Yeah, and write as well. I mean, it's an impossible task.
Yeah, the writing is funny when John changes a few of Paul's words with a pen. He keeps getting given a pen. He's writing all these new words in.
Yeah, but that's great. Isn't that great, though, to see?
That's fantastic.
They're actually writing together. And I think the thing is, your man mentions it in the article as well, is that there's a lot of this is a love story between John and Paul.
Yeah, when they do the song Two of Us at the one microphone, it's fantastic, yeah.
But at the end, even on the roof, when they're playing one of the songs, I Got a Feeling, I think it is, you can see McCartney looking at him going, Jenny, I love you, man.
Yeah, you can also see McCartney looking at the cops going, great, this will make a great film. They're up on the roof now. But it's really funny because what happened then, the Beatles' last gig was Candlestick Park in San Francisco in August 29, 1966. So it's nearly 3 years. And this is they're playing up here. It's not a proper gig because you don't buy tickets for it or anything. And then when they walk off at the end, that's it. They are never play again on stage. 6 months later, they're at Tittenhurst Park in August and they get photographs taken. And that's the last time the Beatles were ever together. Yeah.
I mean, you're watching that and you're kind of, you know, we're all aware of that. I mean, it's like when George walks out, you're watching it and you know he's coming back, but you're still grabbing a cushion and going, Janie, what's going on? And at the end, when they walk off the stage, you're thinking, oh my God, isn't that terrible? But also, isn't it kind of perfect in a way?
Oh yeah,
because
absolutely.
The story of the Beatles is perfect way it is.
The Beatles broke up while they were still the biggest thing ever, and they would not have been, absolutely. Exactly. Although having said that, they could have brought out another White album, i.e. the first four solo albums by all of them had some. Even Sentimental Journey by Ringo had one song on it maybe, but they all had brilliant songs. Like the best post-Beatles song by Paul McCartney is Maybe I'm Amazed, again from the first album. So they all would have had great stuff. Obviously George's stuff, yeah.
Or is it backseat? You know, he pulls out backseat of McCarr somewhere in this as well. They go, that's good. And also, All Things Must Pass. See, this is the mystery I got in this. I suppose maybe it wasn't finished. But when they start paying attention to George, they do For Your Blue and Old Brown Shoe and I Me Mine. And again, I don't think they're great songs. And I think if you look at the album, the Let It Be album, if Don't Let Me Down had been on that instead of one of those, it would have improved it. But also, All Things Must Pass is such a fantastic song.
Yeah.
And you go, why did they work up one after 9 or 9? Why didn't they work up All Things Must Pass?
Yeah, well, why did George let Phil Spector get his hands on it? He ruined it. Anyway, look, there's a few things here. Look, Pat, I have to say, here's a question here, right? It's a brilliant question on text. Right? How does it compare to the Let It Be film? I love it.
I noticed that Michael Lindsay-Hogg was talking last week and saying, oh, well, they're talking about releasing it now. I don't think that'll happen, to be honest with you. And I can't see the point of it. I don't see why anyone would want to watch, and with the greatest respect, I don't see why anyone would want to watch Let It Be after seeing this. Because this is, you know, Peter Jackson was talking about when they put out that trailer that we were talking about, and he said it was a deliberate move, you know.
To make people feel good during the pandemic,
And it did. I mean, it really did. And the whole world erupted when that came out. It was a great moment. But and then he was accused of whitewashing it. But that's not what really happens in this. You know, it does show the warts and all. And I think Paul McCartney especially.
Oh, absolutely. There's no sanitising anything. Yeah. Also, the language. Like, I mean, there's not that much. But there's very little bad language in it. And Disney were really worried about any bad language, wanted to take it out. And they said, absolutely out of the question. Leave anything in, you know.
The thing when you see at the start of each episode, people are smoking in this. That just shows how the world has changed. There's use of tobacco. Warning.
Yeah, there's a warning thing about it. People are smoking cigarettes in this. Watch out.
They are. and my God, smoke. That small room in Savile Row must have been able to see your hand in front of your face in that. Everybody has a Gasper on the go all the time.
A Gasper on the go. On that note, Pat, we got to go. So because we're up towards the end. So look, I'll tell you, thanks a million, Pat Carty, for the current edition of Hot Press, the definitive Beatles, etc. I'm going to just play this.
Oh yeah, go buy it now.
Yeah, right.
I'll
be back in a minute. See you, Pat. Thanks.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.